thank everybody for tuning in. You can find us online at Rose City Native Radio. You can email us at pdxnativeradio@gmail.com. As always, we'll see you next week, Indian Country. Stay safe, wash your hands, wear a mask.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
You're listening to KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 4 Special Programming Campaign. Check out all the great special programs we're bringing you now through April 15th at kboo.fm/ATNF4.
KVD Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you. We heard this State of the Union. They say it's not an official State of the Union, but it was an address to the joint houses of our government, Donald J. Trump, and it was a doozy. And we wanted to talk to a number of people to see what they thought, what we should be paying attention to. For me, it seems like he tosses out a lot of things to confuse, to distract, to kind of troll people. And then we better pay attention to certain things that he's saying. But I'll share some of that in a little bit. I wanted to talk to one person who's always up at Capitol Hill and kicking up dust. You know her, you love her. Her name is Medea Benjamin from Code Pink. Medea, how are you doing? And just one thing before we even start, how did you feel about all the women that were on the Democratic side wearing pink? They kind of what was that about? You know, on one side they demonize you, then they go, you know, let's wear these pink outfits, you know, to protest.
We're going to go in tomorrow and claim them all as Code Pink members now.
Why not? You know, they claim you. Obviously, they were biting off you guys. But seriously, what did you think of that, just to see that? Because that was interesting.
Yeah, they were wearing the pink to say that Trump had was doing things that were anti-women. And I think it's always nice to see a bunch of people in pink. But, you know, I don't know. I'm so beyond the partisan politics, Davey. I don't know about you, but, you know, I can't get excited about either of the parties. And, you know, I'm obviously much closer to the women in the Democratic Party. But I just keep thinking about how most of them supported genocide, and that's not very pro-women.
Well, that's why I was curious, because I know in the past, you and so many others have called them to task. So just to see that co-optation, I thought was very interesting.
Yeah.
But the issue at hand, this speech, a lot of things were said. What stood out for you? What do you think we should be paying attention to? And does this really resonate in the halls of the Capitol when you're up there?
Well, I was pretty shocked about how partisan it was. There was no real attempt at all in this, you know, what is it, 2 hours of me, I'm so great, the best thing that's ever happened, the most beautiful, the most this, the most that, and just poking his fingers in the eyes of the Democrats. And I just don't remember that addresses to Congress were supposed to be like that. That was more a campaign speech to me. And yeah. I feel that it's very, very inappropriate to be doing that kind of thing when you're the leader of a country and you're supposed to represent the country. So I thought it was quite disgustingly partisan. And, you know, the Democrats and Republicans, I guess, were ready for that. And you saw the constant jumping up and down on the Republican side, every little thing that he said, and, you know, all his lies and exaggerations. And then on the Democratic side, you know, he said, it's funny, he said, you know, even if I did the best thing in the world, and I can't remember what, do you remember, David, what he said?
He said he was going to cut taxes.
No, even if I did something that they were going to love.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they wouldn't acknowledge it, because nothing he could do would be anything that the Democrats would acknowledge. And I was thinking, yeah, well, one thing they would probably clap for if he said that he was going to keep standing by Israel no matter what, which, interestingly enough, he didn't even mention Israel. He talked about bringing the hostages from Gaza. I don't think he mentioned the word Israel.
No, he didn't.
Which was quite remarkable. But if he had, I think the Democrats would be forced to get up and clap with him.
I want to ask you, I said a lot of stuff seems to be bluster. He tosses out stuff, and from what I'm seeing, the numbers don't add up. But there is policy that we should be concerned about. The Trump, the Gaza plump, Trump thing that he was doing, talking about making this a beachfront destination. I'm concerned about that. And I don't know if that gets traction in the halls of Congress. Is this something that is taken seriously? Are folks really talking about permanently removing folks from Gaza and the West Bank and all those places?
When I ask Republicans about it, they kind of laughed and say, oh, that's just Trump bluster. He doesn't really mean that. And when you talk to Democrats, they say, oh, yes, we're really worried about that. Of course, you know, they were the ones that were in power during the genocide. I do think that he and the Democrats have been serious about wanting to get rid of the Palestinians. And if he could force Jordan and Egypt to take them, I think he would love to do that. But that's just not going to happen. So I don't think there's any traction over this idea that the U.S. is going to somehow own Gaza, but I do think there's traction for trying to see a way to let Israel and Netanyahu particularly do what he wants to do, which is, quote, finish the job, which means to start bombing again. And, you know, we see that Israel just cut off all humanitarian aid to Gaza. And I don't see anybody up in arms about that. And as I said, he didn't even bring that up tonight. It would have been interesting to see how the Democrats would have responded to that.
Alongside that, he also didn't mention, or maybe I missed it, he didn't reiterate his promise to crack down on illegal protest on the campus. Now, maybe I missed it, but he did send that out earlier this morning.
And And he said he's brought free speech back to America.
Yeah, that's what I thought was interesting. But this is a very real thing in terms of policies, in terms of how campuses have responded, and even arrest, you know, for at least arrest and expulsion of folks who have been protesting the genocide. How have you seen that playing out? Is this something that is getting additional traction that we need to be paying attention to? I know it got the traction with the Democrats, but now with Trump and his bluster, are they going 10 more toes down on this?
Well, yes, I think it's of tremendous concern. He put out that message today that these students should be expelled, arrested, or deported, and that he reiterated that there would be no federal funds to universities that allowed these kinds of protests. So this is very, very dangerous and disconcerting. And I think he's already done so much to instill fear into the students at so many universities that we've seen a huge drop-off in the protests. And there are some students, like at Barnard College, who have continued the protests. And let's see what is going to be the result of that, because the campus presidents and those in charge of the fiscal health of the universities are going to be very, very nervous about allowing protests when it means a cutoff of all federal funds.
So is this protesting limited to protesting Israel? But what happens if students who are Black want to protest, you know, police brutality? What happens if it's, you know, brown students that want to protest mass deportations? Where's this line being drawn? Because I'm seeing protests all around. They might not call it protests, they'll call them rallies, but I've been seeing Trump rallies here. You know, once you leave on the other side of the, when you go to the Arinda side of things in the East Bay, you know, people are doing these caravans, they're waving the Trump flags. We saw what happened in Ohio with the neo-Nazis coming up there in Cincinnati. And do we have any idea what is going to constitute an illegal protest?
Well, at this point, what they've really been cracking down on is the universities. But I don't know in terms of how it's going to be spread out to protests in general. It's going to be interesting, Davey, because there is a hearing that's going to be the mayors of four major cities are being called into Congress, cities that are sanctuary cities. And they're going to be grilled, just like the university presidents were grilled on Palestine. They're going to be grilled about their support for immigrants and going against federal policy. And these are mayors from New York City and Chicago, Denver and Boston. And it's going to be pretty ugly the way the federal government is going to be cracking down on cities, on big Democratic-run cities, and trying to use its weight in terms of withholding federal funds.
Well, we know with Eric Adams, the mayor of New York, he's been kind of cozying up to Trump, and I think would probably side with him and say he had no choice, which brings me to my last question, Medea Benjamin. It appears to me that a deal was cut in the middle of the night, and that deal was we'll hold off. We won't use our full weight to object. We're not going to fund any large rallies to object. We're just going to kind of maybe, you know, stand up and shove a cane, you know, and disrupt the proceedings. And that's about it. Meaning that the Democrats kind of found a common ground with the Republicans, which is the left. And that's Code Pink, that's BLM, that's immigrant folks, that's all of us who've come up and have been fighting the good fight. I think the plan is to somehow figure out ways to collectively and, you know, demonize and criminalize any of our activities. That's the deal that I feel is cut, which means that they may start off with the campuses, but all of a sudden stuff that you all do may be highly illegal, you know, tomorrow. And what we do on the air might be illegal. And that seems to be that I'm concerned about. And I don't know if you hear that sort of rumblings up when you're in all the Congress.
Well, we visited a congressman today, Pete Sessions, who had signed a letter with three other congresspeople, Republicans, saying that Code Pink and two other groups should be investigated for aiding and abetting illegal aliens, meaning
really?
We published on our website information about how people could have their legal rights if confronted by ICE. That's coming on the immigration side. On the pro-Palestine side, we have been hit with lawsuits like others have, saying that we are pro-Hamas. And I just saw the head of policy of CARE, the Islamic group that has been the subject of a lot of attacks. And we were talking about how worried they are about how this Congress is going to come down on them. So yes, we should all be very worried. First, they came for the students, and then who do they come from? Which is why we must be so supportive as much as we can for student protesters as well as protesters in general, because there's going to be a lot of need for getting out on the streets in the coming years.
That seems to be the tactic now. Slap lawsuits, even if they're meaningless. You can calculate that. It's like, okay, if we put a lawsuit on you, might cost you $20,000 to fight it minimum, you know, and even if it gets dismissed, you're out $20,000. I'm Elon Musk. I got billions, so it's no big deal. And that seems to, that should be concerning.
Well, look how they're going after Greenpeace. And we're not talking about $20,000. We're talking about lots and lots of money there. So yeah, they're going after organizations that have been effective in fighting for the environment, for people's rights, for the rights of Palestinians, all of that. And I think this is a time where we've got to bring ourselves together and understand that an attack on one is an attack on all.
Medea Benjamin, thank you for joining us. Any last things that you want to leave our listeners with moving forward?
Well, there is one thing that concerns me, Davey. There is one thing that Trump is doing that I think we should be supporting, and that is trying to end the war in Ukraine. And the Democrats are coming off as even a bigger war party than the Republicans are when they say we should keep funding and fueling a war that has no victory on the battlefield, that more and more Ukrainians are just going to keep dying. So I think whether that we have to consider ourselves wanting to make peace no matter who is in the White House, and don't oppose efforts for negotiations just because it's a Republican that's trying to do it.
Definitely words to think about, and we appreciate you. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Later. Ha. Hey, hey, hey. Ho, 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 ho. Hard Knock Radio. East, west, hard north, south. Radio, conectados. Man. Every set, every hood. Barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up. Stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs. One love. We know where y'all at. Brown Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415's bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you go.
flowing. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks. Questioning the poor guy, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side, learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
Hard Knocks Radio, David D hanging out with you. We want to continue our conversation and look at some of the deeper issues that we need to pay attention to after last night's speech. Joining me are two freedom fighters, journalists, organizers, people who are go-to folks when it comes to these matters. We're talking about Kali Ankuno from Cooperation Jackson and Tandi Chimurenga, journalist, author out of Los Angeles. Last night was a lot, and I said earlier, I think this president... and his administration likes to troll people. They like to say crazy things, get everybody to react. They're very good at doing political theater. Mm-hmm. But there are some very serious things that need to be underlined, because people do respond to the theater, and they may move away from a target, or they may overreact to something that's said. So I wanted to bring you all on because you guys are able to cut to the chase, and I'll start off with you, Kali. What should we be really taking away from last night's speech?
That he's serious. That he's serious about executing his program. And, you know, the gaslighting, as you alluded to, it serves a strategic purpose of making his primary audience, his base, feel good, feel confident, and be just uninformed enough to continue believing him. So he laid out fairly clearly, I'm not backing down on tariffs. I'm serious about reasserting dominance, if not seizing Panama, mm-hmm. and Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
I'm serious about making the rest of the world pay rent to the extent that I can extract it, you know, to benefit the United States. He doubled down on all that. And, you know, even in the face of some criticism from some Republicans about his basically kind of dismantling of NATO, abandonment of Ukraine, you know, folks begging that he kind of back off some of the tariffs. He stared them down, you know, and told them, this is the way forward. You either get on board or I'll roll over you too. He laid that out pretty clearly last night.
Yeah, I think he did. When I say the trolling, and I don't think you should take it lightly, so I'm glad you said that it's serious. The trolling comes in the form of political theater. He has the Latino border guard, so that kind of confuses people. Wait a second, if he's doing mass deportations, why's the border guard there? He brings the young black kid, 13 years old, says this guy wants to be a cop. Why, he's selling us the crime mm-hmm. bill. And why he's basically selling us the narrative that I'm going to get rid of, you know, immunity for cops. Like, they can do what they want. And at the same time, what goes over people's head is that this 13-year-old kid had 13 brain surgeries, and they're cheering him, but you just cut the funding for cancer research.
That's right. That's right.
So you have folks cheering, including a lot of black folks, who's like, oh, he was so cute. I mean, I wanted to shed a tear too, but I'm not going to lose sight of the prize. And so those types of things get us talking, because all on my feet is the 13-year-old kid and not the somber assessment that you just gave to us, Kali, which I think is something that, you know, we really need to take serious. He's dead serious. He may be clownish in his delivery, mm-hmm. but this is the way forward, as you said, get on or get off. or get on or get rolled over. Tandy, how did you see this?
Yeah, I was disturbed about a number of things I saw last night. Kali has mentioned the most egregious, but, you know, I was concerned about the Democratic, quote unquote, resistance, if we can call it that. One person, I don't even remember who I was talking to. I talked to so many different people, but they were basically saying, is this all you got? Holding up pickleball paddles? Really? That's all you got? I was concerned about people's absence and, you know, this politic of non-engagement. We're not going to go and sit for his lies. You're not, you know, not going to be there, quote unquote, the Democratic representatives. But at the same time, it just helps to continuously show to people that the Democrats have no problem, that they are, that they have no plan, that they are part of the problem. And as Kali has said elsewhere, they're concerned about reckless change, the way Trump is going about it. They don't really have a fundamental difference of opinion in terms of what Trump is doing. At one point, when Trump was talking about appraising Marco Rubio, I had to remind myself, you know, it was a brother standing behind him and he patted him on the shoulder. I was like, is that Hakeem Jeffries? You are patting on the shoulder Marco Rubio, the dude who Trump sent to Panama to bully the folks, the dude who went out there to organize these quote unquote prison deals with these other countries to accept deportees of the US or possibly American citizens to hold them in prisons in these countries. You patting this dude on the back? Really? It's like that. So the other issue I had was, you called it gaslighting, but someone else called it the emotional bombs, you know, the feel good part. You know, like, if you'll allow me just 1 second, I remember growing up hearing about blaxploitation films in the 70s. So once I got of age, got me a driver's license, and got me a little bit of cash, I was able to go drive to the video store. That's what we had back in the day, video stores. And I just rented a bunch of blaxploitation films to see what people were talking about, this quote unquote golden age of black cinema, right? I'm just saying, that's what I was told. And one of the things I noticed about a lot of these blaxploitation films, like Three the Hard Way, Get Christy Love, Coffee, Sheba Baby, Truck Turner, Shaft, you had black folks who did not rely on the police. They would take matters into their own hands and handle their business. Or you had black people who were not representative of local cops, but they were adjacent, and that they were had the power of cops. You had Shaft, a former cop who's now a private detective. You had Tamara Dobson, I believe, who was playing a federal agent, and you had Truck Turner, Isaac Hayes, who was a bail agent. So these are people who have got some degree of state power, but they're not the local police who we run up against every single day. And you contrast that with how through the years you have more and more black people portraying police.
Right.
And then you come to last night seeing, oh, this little black boy who wants to be a cop, we're going to make him a cop. We're also going to make him and make his dreams come true. We're going to make him a Secret Service agent. I'm like, wow, this is who you chose. This is the black face you chose to promote last night. A law enforcement person. Just wow.
And not even an adult, a kid.
Not even an adult.
You know.
Just wow.
Because an adult, you would have got the backlash. You would have there's been too many adults that have portrayed that role, from Sheriff David in Milwaukee on down, where people wouldn't have stood for that, you know. But the kid who has 13 brain surgeries for cancer,
you can see the scars on his head.
Yeah. And again, what is not talked about in the gaslighting, because he says, I'm going to make sure, you know, you get the best treatment ever. But dude, you just defunded. You just defunded all the cancer research.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing.
The other thing I wanted to say about this, and I'm, you know, I'm not into conspiracy theories because they're killing us out in the open, as one of my elders used to say. The way that that works with this little black boy as the face of law enforcement, it's like a continuation of this quote unquote black American experiment or project. And what I mean by that is this ADOS FBA type of arrangement. It was during, it was during Trump's administration that you have this rise of FBA and ADOS and this arrangement around quote unquote illegal immigration. You know, Yvette Carnell being on the board of that white nationalist anti-immigration project. And you have all of this rhetoric coming out about African and Caribbean immigrants as quote unquote tethers. You know, black people adopting this white nativist anti-immigration sentiment. And I, that's what I call as part of that Black American experiment project, to continuously use us as a prop, showing that, see, not just integrated, but this is, these people are the mirror of us. These are the blacks that we want, that we exalt.
I'm glad you brought
it's
that
scary.
Up.
It's scary. It's frightening. It's frightening.
It's frightening. And for people who don't know, she's talking about there's the move outside that started off very, very small, but then it's been strategically amplified, usually in right-wing spaces, and now we're seeing it being amplified online. Many of our feeds are now bombarded with people who we don't follow, with black folks who are quote-unquote from the hood. They kind of have a certain type of mannerism. They're like, Trump is for the hood, and it's all about foundational black Americans and African descendants of slaves or whatever, American descendant of slaves. And it's one that looks down on any sort of immigrant, including black immigrants, and that has been a play. Many of them have endorsed Trump and said this is the way to go. So that's something we need to pay close attention to. Kali, let me bring you back in. And you said something a while ago. You said this right after the election. You said a deal has been cut with the Democrats and we're on our own.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to say, Kali's just being dramatic. And I wanted to say, maybe Kali's wrong. And, you know, and you know, because we got into a whole discussion about basketball where you usually are wrong. But this time I was like, it kept sticking in the back of my mind. And with each day, I started to see like this dude was spot on. Can you talk about this deal? Because now it's more than obvious that a deal was cut, which is why we don't see the Democrats, at least the establishment within the Democratic Party, doing anything. They're out to lunch. And as Tondi said, you know, patting the enemy on the back.
Well, I mean, where to begin on this, y'all? They got differences of tactics. This is the part we need to get people to clearly understand. They have differences on tactics.
Mm-hmm.
They fundamentally agree on principle about maintaining and extending the U.S. empire. They just have tactical agreements about how to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But they are fundamentally aligned. For instance, around China and about cutting China down to size and about going to war with China. They both fundamentally agree on that. There is no daylight between the Democrats and the Republicans on that. And even some of their allies, you know, listen to some of the stuff that the Canadians and even some of the Mexicans are saying in terms of their elected representatives, quote unquote. They keep turning around and saying, if you listen very carefully and intentionally, why are you doing this to us, but you're not doing it to China? Or you should be doing this on China, to China, and we will join with you. Particularly the Canadians keep saying that. So they got fundamental alignment. And when James Carville, who's a, you know, one of the chief Democratic strategists, at least he was, he may be more of just a talking head now, but he has an inside track on at least what the DNC thinks and what they're planning on doing. And his key advice is exactly what executed last night. Right? Just sit there, don't applaud, act dignified, you know, all the respectability politics on full display. He didn't even want people putting up placards and stuff that you were talking about, Tondi.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even want that.
Mm. Right?
And he was just like, you know, we need to keep the front and the facade of democratic order and a united front in the face of the world, even where the institutions and edifice and core parts of our base are being utterly dismantled and taken apart and removed from the apparatus of the state. And I'm talking about, in particular, all the black employees who work for the federal government, who constitute a critical majority of the workers, particularly the unionized sectors of the workers who work for the federal government. That's his base. That's the Democratic Party base.
Hmm.
And they are just being thrown out basically in the streets. And Hakeem Jeffries just sit there and says, well, what can we do? Right? It's their government. No, don't buy into that, that it's their government. You sitting there if nothing,
applauding.
The last 12 years of how the Republicans in the minority have just obstructed the whole government, the bills can barely get passed or nothing moves, or they dictate terms, even in the minority. They should have at least learned from just watching their quote unquote friends on the other side of the aisle of how to be a disruptive force, if that's what they chose to do. So you either left with the notion that the leadership is bad, and if it was just bad leadership, you would see a more revolt from the base of the Democratic Party, but you're not seeing that. So it's clearly not a question of bad leadership, at least by which the Democrats are making a measure, which leaves you to conclude they actually agree with this and alignment with this. I'm just trying to paint a picture so folks understand. I can go deeper in terms of the policy and the blow by blow. But one thing I guess is good to remember, the last time the government was majorly downsized in the way it's being downsized now, just to refresh people's memory, that was under Bill Clinton. He just did it through the regular means of how the government operates. And if you don't believe me, go listen to your boy Rahm Emanuel, right? Who was a chief operative of Obama. Rahm Emanuel was going on the talking tour now, just talking about how we did this during the Clinton administration, but we just used the levers of the democratic process. We went through the Congress and the Senate, and in the Senate, when they finally got it approved, the Senate agreed 99-1 on downsizing the federal government. So what that alludes to is just like, hey man, you just going about dismantling the government in the wrong way. There's a way that you can do this which doesn't cause all this chaos and convulsion. And they just don't understand that Trump and his crew, they want the chaos and convulsion. They want the shock. They want the therapy, the shock therapy, as you was alluding to, Davey, because it keeps folks off balance. And the way that he's doing what he's doing is very much taken from the page of what Viktor Orban perfected a decade ago in the dismantling of Hungary and turning it into what he himself calls an illiberal democracy. That's what a term that Orban coined. And that's exactly what the Steve Bannons of the world picked up and then brought as a term of strategy over to the Republican Party. And what you see Trump doing, why he's doing, you know, this staggering, I'm going to do one or two executive orders a day, you know, it just leaves so many folks kind of bewildered on what to focus on, right? Or you kind of like a boxer who's punk's drunk right now. That's how most folks I'm hearing are feeling. Like, you know, the second I rear my head up, you know, to try to strike back, I get a body blow, you know, from this left hook or
right,
whatever the situation is. That is basically what Trump is doing. But remember, the Democrats knew very clearly what this man was going to do. Why? Because he told us very clearly. Right. There's nothing that they are pushing a couple of years ago.
Well, I appreciate you. Go ahead, Tandy.
I just wanted to say that the Democratic senator from Michigan who gave the response last night, those were her words. They are concerned about reckless change, the way Trump is going about doing this.
So somebody asked me about Hakeem Jeffries, who came to the Bay Area the other night. And a lot of what you said, Kali, about not being a disruptive force, I saw that to be the case. Respectability politics, you know, you're in a building, 400 or 500 people, not right-wing folks. Left-wing folks are like, yo, what are you doing? How come you're not fighting? We're out here fighting. And I reminded somebody who was a Hakeem Jeffries fan, I said, this man went 10 toes down and hard in the paint on fellow Democrats who simply said, cease fire, than he has with dismantling of the government. You know, you've seen the establishment in the Democratic Party go after folks like it was nobody's business for saying, I think what we're seeing in the Middle East is genocide. What the hell? Where does Kali live? Defund him, you know, take away everything. I mean, we can just look locally and see what Scott Wiener has been doing. Right. You know, he's been on a rampage on that. And, you know, and you know, kind of like he ain't out there with the flag for this. And we can go on and on, which brings me to this question. The other party that is in the back that wasn't even mentioned, Medea Benjamin pointed that out, is Israel. And our thoughts on that, because that is a factor that's there in terms of controlling a certain type of direction that people are going in, putting fear in some, and basically, you know, having people align themselves a lot more with this debacle than we should. Any thoughts on the role that they're playing?
You talking about Israel in particular, what role they're playing?
I mean, just AIPAC and all those groups, because that's a factor that's in the mix. And it usually plays out more on the Democratic side of the aisle than it does on the right. But they're there. And I wonder if that's, you know, if they're playing a role in contributing to not seeing too much of a response.
Absolutely, they're playing a role in that regard. You know, the just look at Netanyahu's, you know, response, right? Netanyahu is loving this moment, and one would argue, could really argue, easily argue. I mean, it's an argument that you know I was making, Davey, because I stated here that Netanyahu employed a strategy to help ensure that Trump won office. Right? He basically ignored Biden and put Biden in a bind. Like, look, I'm going to press this. And per your commitment, you're gonna give me what I want, you know. And I'm not really backing down because I know how to play American politics, right? I know how to play American politics well. And there's somebody on the other end that if you don't do it, he will give me everything I want and then some. So it wasn't by no accident that the first major engagement, one of the first people who showed up, you know, a calling at the White House was Netanyahu. And it was no accident that Netanyahu basically just told us and the rest of the world, I mean, Trump basically told us, why with Netanyahu sitting right there smiling, we gonna turn Gaza into the Riviera of the Mediterranean, the Riviera of the Middle East. Palestinians have no right to return, and we're going to send them to Jordan or to Syria or to Egypt or someplace else, but y'all not coming back here. Now, that was just the most blatant violation of international law ever articulated. But it just went, not just the United States media just covered it as if that was just normal speak. CNN, MSNBC just kind of like moved on, like, oh, he made some more kind of outrageous statements. Did not put it in any critical international context. What level of violation of the international rules-based order that the United States government itself set up, that he just completely ripped that to shreds with that statement, and Netanyahu was just sitting there smiling like, thank you. You know, let's roll, let's go. And if you look at what's happened since, you know, they violated and changed the terms of the so-called peace agreement that Trump bragged and boasted about creating, and then Trump and them allowing that to go, you know, full-on measure, and then threaten the Palestinian resistance, like, if y'all don't give up more folks, we're going to just let them unleash more hell on you, right, as a pressure tactic. And then it's basically just part of the agreement is y'all can also do what y'all been doing in Gaza, in the West Bank. Take it. The tacit agreement that's in the background that both the Democrats and the Republicans completely support, and what's just becoming more clear, is that the United States government has given the green light to genocide and ethnic cleansing, and that is a bipartisan affair. So not only are they just kind of sitting in the background, I barely heard any mention. I heard some allusions last night to the question around Palestine, you know, a few things that were kind of implied. But basically, you know, they are redrawing the map as we speak. And this is a lesson to the world that if you challenge us, this is what we can do to you and your country. So y'all better fall in line, unless you want your country to be a parking lot too, and something that we just come and seize and take. They, you know, Trump has just brought back very clearly, you know, the politics of the 19th century. What I can capture and keep is mine. Might makes right, and if you don't like it, you know, you better get you a bigger gun than the one I got, and be prepared to use it. That's the real politics that he's articulating. And again, folks need to understand, in principle, the Democrats would like to negotiate and do it a little bit more smoothly, a bit more orderly, but they do not have a fundamental disagreement with the outcomes and the objectives that are being pursued.
They don't see any of this as being wrong.
Nope.
And that is what we have to understand. This is wrong.
They just find it a little distasteful.
Right, and how you do it.
Yeah, you know, it's how you do it, man. You know,
as they said, it's the difference between, you know, Luther Vandross singing, "He's going to cheat on you," and, you know, and 50 Cent just saying, "I cheated on you," you know? But he said it nicer, but they get the same outcome. As we close out, Tandy, what marching orders would you give our listeners moving forward?
You know, surprisingly, my marching orders are not that different from a lot of folks who were on Roland Martin's live feed last night. He had this alternative to the State of the Union, the State of Our Union, marathon session talking with union leaders, church leaders, grassroots organizers, etc. And what came out of that was we have to organize and we have to fight. Now, of course, the interim, long-term goals are going to be different from, you know, bourgeois middle-class Black folks' aspirations and those of us who consider ourselves to be part of the Black liberation movement. But again, at minimum, this is not the time to despair. We have fought before, and we need to continue to fight. We need to continue to organize. When you fight, you win. Yeah, and so, seriously, sincerely, even some of Roland Martin's guests were talking about join an organization. Like, when you answer the call in the Black church, what's your church home? Find you a political home. And I have to say that my message mirrors that. I found me a local political home. Of course, I've been doing work with Kali for years now in various capacities. Find you a home and do some work.
Yeah.
Get to work.
Appreciate that. And that's why I had you two on. Dondi Chemaringa, thank you so much. Kali and Kuno, thank you. You got about 15 seconds. Any last marching orders from you, Kali?
I'm going to just do a plug. Check me and Tandy out on our Building Fight Formula Education series next Tuesday, March 11th, 4 p.m. West Coast time, 7 p.m. East Coast time, 6 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Mountain. We're going to be going over part of what you're calling marching orders in a systematic and organized way as we can as part of this ongoing series, which is the second Tuesday of each month, the rest of this year. So check us out as we try to lay some of this out in detail.
There you have it. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
I'ma still sing my song. I'ma still shout my life. Can't stop me. You can't stop me, no. I'ma still sing my song. I'ma still shine my light. You can't stop me.
They said we locked down, okay, I'm going in my bag. Gonna be a beast, sharpen the skills, working on the craft. Transported the lab to the living room, sheltered in place. I'll be compelled to create, might catch me singing old Tony, Tony, Tony. Off the balcony, like in Italy, where my neighbors going viral. Mode survival, got the vitals, stocked the cupboards. Grocery store was on some other, so alarming. Filling shopping carts and fighting over Charmin. I'm looking for them vitamins, I'm not a scientist. But if we would've listened to Larry Brilliant, we wouldn't be in this predicament. No more hugs or handshakes. Shakes of fists, we bumping elbows, coughing in public, damn near criminals, side eyes and smirks. How we gon' pay rent? Can't work. All my musician homies out here, pockets is hurt. They can bail out Wall Street with over 1 trillion. I'm trying to figure out how to stretch that 1200. Congress need to put a stop to all the rent and mortgage. Put our heads together, we can manifest abundance. Come on.
I'ma still sing my song.
Gin with the prayers every morning. Gotta check in with the spirit, so important. Riding the cold with the quarantine. Open mic live streams. Good to see my people still striving. D-Nice broke Instagram with the livest party ever on the net. Owner really been a vet. Was you there when Chris Rochelle had him at Liege? Let's support our people no matter prestige. Hard times when you got mouths to feed and the gigs canceled. Time to get innovative. We can't sit idle. Every night I go IG live on the piano and it's helpful. Made a little something on the Venmo. Told my daughter stay productive. Now she conducting workouts on Zoom, a walking bucket. I'm about to start online lessons, private instruction. In the face of adversity, seize the moment. Maybe this a time of reflection, connection to self and family and health and God and heart and soul and dreams. Or sit still and just be whatever help you feel free. Come on.
I'ma still sing my song.
Energy before we chose to be in this human form. We are grounded. We are confident. We know what is ours to do. As we allow the world to slow down around us, we can hear clearly the divine melody that is only for us to hear. We came so that we may inspire each other, that we may love one another. Divine essence acting as me, I give thanks. I give thanks for all the moments before this now perfect queendom of heaven, this moment. I give thanks for the moment where I forgot that I was God, for I would never be able to be in this space right now. But I know my purpose. I know my work in this world. And I am willing, I am able.
Jesus, not me, 'cause I throw hands. Try Jesus, please don't try me, because I'm fine. Touch me or mine, we gon' have to scrap. So, try Jesus, please don't try me, because I'm fine. I have no problem laying these hands. Try Jesus, don't try me, 'cause I throw hands. Try Jesus, please don't try me, because I'm fine. What you say? Turn the other cheek. Oh, but this one part of the Bible that just don't sit right with me. So try Jesus, please don't try me, 'cause I fight. I have no problem laying these hands.
Are you interested in learning to report on your community? Consider joining the volunteer KBOO News Team. We train volunteers on journalism, ethics, and radio storytelling. Check it out. Come to our virtual volunteer orientation on Saturday, March 8th at 11 a.m. Find more information at kboo.fm/volunteer. That's kboo.fm/volunteer. I want you to get together.
KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Goodbye.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this